This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Hello and welcome to Spawned, a common sense, generally fun, and hopefully helpful discussion on parenting and parenting culture. Hey, I'm Kristen Chase.
And I'm Liz Dumbiter. We're the co-founders of CoolMomPics.com. And today we are going to talk about tips for raising resilient kids and hopefully being more resilient parents ourselves in a world gone sideways. We've got an amazing guest.
Yes, we do. And as always, we will close out our show with our cool picks of the week. And we'll be back with our awesome guest right after this. This episode of Spawned is brought to you by ParentEducate.com, where parents go to learn from an ever-growing library of over 80 online research-based courses. With ParentEducate.com, parents can quickly become fluent in infant, toddler, and preschool care through brief 20 to 30-minute courses on topics like brain development, constructive play, discipline, biting, and more. Parents who sign up for ParentEducate.com's 7-day trial get free access to the entire catalog of courses for a whole week. The Child Care Education Institute, which, by the way, is the number one trainer of pre-K and daycare teachers, is behind ParentEducate.com. So all courses are packed with the same information and techniques taught to leading early childhood educators. And all the courses are available 24/7 on any device and can be started and stopped at any time. Head over to ParentEducate.com to start your free 7-day trial today. And be sure to use code CMP21 at checkout so you can save 20% after your trial ends. That's a free 7-day trial plus 20% off using the code CMP21 at ParentEducate.com.
So let me tell you a little bit about Dr. Madeline Levine. She's been called the leading voice against the culture of overparenting and status obsession. Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah.
We know about that.
Yes.
She's a psychologist, consultant, educator, and speaker. And you may know her from her two previous New York Times bestsellers, The Price of Privilege and Teach Your Children Well. And her newest book, just out in paperback, is called Ready or Not, Preparing Our Kids to Thrive in an Uncertain and Rapidly Changing World. In it, she uses the latest developments in neuroscience, epigenetics, and extensive research to identify the skills our kids need to succeed. Plus, she offers actionable day-to-day tips for those of us parents who want to raise our kids to be prepared, enthusiastic, you know, all those good things to help them face an unknown future with confidence and optimism. And clearly, it could not have come at a better time, Kristen.
I totally agree with you. Dr. Levine is also a co-founder of Challenge Success, which is a project of the Stanford Graduate School of Education that provides families and schools with practical, research-based tools to create a more balanced and academically fulfilling life for kids. And, you know, you may have seen her already or heard her, but seen her on shows like The Today Show, Good Morning America, CBS This Morning, Nightline, as well as in papers like The New York Times, Wall Street Journal, and USA Today. Today, she lives in San Francisco with her husband and is not only the proud mother of three grown sons, but she is a newly minted grandmother, too. And we are so excited that she is making the time to talk with us today because we definitely need her advice and her encouragement. Welcome, Dr. Levine.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Oh, we're so glad to have you. I mean, we were discussing a little bit about how incredible this book is. You should know, like, I keep saying to my partner, like, oh, let me read you this. Oh, let me read. Oh, wait, you got to listen to this. Oh, here's that thing we were talking. And he's like, I'm doing things. I'm working. And I'm like, no. I like keep running in with the book. And so it's that good. And I don't always say that, but I really love it. And I'm wondering what your inspiration was for it. I mean, oddly, it was first published days before the pandemic hit the US, and it's just so relevant now. But what made you think to write about this?
So I wasn't prescient. I did not know we were about to have a pandemic. The book came out 2 weeks before lockdown in California. So, you know, it's always like, did you know what was going to happen? And it's like, no, I had no idea what was going to happen. But even aside from COVID, it had become really clear to me that the skill set that we were still pounding away at, you know, get good grades, get into a good college, go into finance, that whole thing was expired. It was basically an expired paradigm. And I don't want to sound at all like I'm anti-intellectual. You know, I'm a Jewish girl from New York, married to a doctor.
I'm not married to a doctor, but.
Right. So I'm not anti-intellectual at all. I think what people need to realize is that for kids to actually do their best, they can't be stressed out, they can't be anxious, they can't be depressed. So it's really in the service of trying to get kids to function well. The reason I started it, and I laughed as you were going over my history, especially Price of Privilege, which was written 15 years ago.
I remember it well. Mm-hmm. I mean, because that's right when my kids were born.
Yeah, yep. I think it's when you were born from looking at your picture. But
and okay. We just like to say, Madeline, you're our new favorite guest. Congratulations. we'll send your trophy out to San Francisco right away.
Thank you. So I wrote the book because, frankly, 15 years ago, Price of Privilege was supposed to be a small little book that nobody read, and it didn't end up that way. It ended up being a very popular book. And what I'm talking about now is really not all that different. And I think what happened to me personally was I got a little depressed, right? I've spent 20 years kind of on the road talking about the data. You know, I have my project at Stanford, the data we've collected about how kids are increasingly depressed and anxious, increasingly, right? So can you imagine you write a book, it's really popular. You tell everybody back off a little bit because you're making your kids anxious and depressed. And 15 years later, you find out that they're even more anxious and depressed. So that was discouraging. And I wanted to talk to people who were not like my usual go-to, which would be psychologists, psychiatrists, educators. I wanted to talk to people who were really in the middle of change. And that ended up being the military and big business. Let me just tell you one anecdote. It won't be the last one, I promise you. But I'm asking for permission early on. So I have three sons who are grown. And this is about 5 years ago before I started Ready or Not. And I go to get a mortgage from a big bank. And I have the woman who is the head of the mortgage department. And my youngest son, whose name is Jeremy, says, "Hey, can I go with you?" And I said, "Sure." So she and I are sitting talking for maybe an hour, hour and a half max. And Jeremy's just being who he is, which is like a really kind, sensitive person. Over the course of this hour, he says to me twice, "Ma, I think the meter's running out. Can I put a quarter in for you?" "Sure, go ahead. Thank you." And you can tell my voice is always scratchy. So at one point he says, "I saw there was tea out there with some honey. Can I get you a cup of tea?" And then he turns to the head of the mortgage department and said, "Would you like one?"
Wow.
He does that. She and I finish our conversation. I get my mortgage. She turns to my son and says, "I want to hire you. You have a job here."
Oh my gosh.
And yeah, well, it was, oh my God, at the moment. So here's the point of it, that she knew nothing about him, not if he was in college, not if he was interested in banking, nothing. So of course I was, you know, sort of like taken aback. And I said, "That's interesting. Tell me what made you offer him a job. He's not a banking person." And she said, "I can teach him all of that. I can't teach him to be the kind of person he is. And he's the guy I want sitting next to me in the office," which he ended up being.
Oh my gosh.
And by the way, he hated banking so much that he's now a lawyer. But that's not the point. The point was that it made incredibly real to me what all these people were saying about, "I don't care what college you went to. I don't care if you're Phi Beta Kappa or not. I want to know that you have the capacity to work with other people, to be empathic, to be flexible." And out of that, I decided to write this book.
Oh my gosh. Okay, I have to jump in with a quick anecdote. So my dad, who's been an executive recruiter for years in advertising, and he wrote a blog for a long time about, you know, some of his stories over the years. And one of his most controversial and popular posts was never bring coffee on an interview. And he talked specifically about how rude it is to show up with like a Starbucks cup in your hand on an interview, mm-hmm. because maybe the person you're interviewing with has just made a fresh pot of coffee just for you at 8 a.m. and then you come in with your own. Or at minimum, at least you should call the person and say, I'm stopping at Starbucks, can I get you one also?
Right.
And a lot of younger people were really angry. This is ridiculous. This is old fashioned. This is stupid. Well, it turns out he had plenty of HR people and senior hirers say to him, actually, this is something that's bothered me. Like it made me think the person was selfish or didn't think about us. So you just gave him validation. I'm so excited to tell him.
Please tell him. Yeah. You know, I end up using a whole bunch of words in the book, like decent and just like old fashioned words, but they matter. I think they matter.
Oh, they really do. And not to follow up with yet another anecdote. Can you tell?
I like your anecdote.
Madeline, this is your crowd. We are anecdotal here.
Plus, you know, we've all been stuck more or less at home for a while.
Yeah, so we're just like,
it's almost 2 years.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, I have four kids. My middle two, I have a 14-year-old and a 12-year-old. They're both in the same school for the first time. And mm-hmm. I wouldn't necessarily call them competitive, but my son, who's 14, is very high achieving, very well liked, right? And my 12-year-old, mm-hmm. who is also actually very high achieving and very well liked, was talking to me about feeling anxious about going to the same school,
sure.
feeling like she was going to compete with her brother, that people were going to hold her to that standard. You know, he's so smart. He gets everything very quickly, which he does more quickly than she does in some ways. And I said, you know, that's not the only kind of smart. That's not the only kind of intelligent. I mean, it's great mm-hmm. that your brother could zip through math, but I was like, you bring people together.
Mm-hmm.
You make your friends all feel welcome. You talk mm-hmm. to the kids who don't have any friends and you sit with them at lunch. You know when people are upset. You feel people's pain. You're so empathic. I was like, those things are so valuable. They are so needed. And we can't feel as though our worth is only based on our SAT scores. I'm talking about college, of course, but our SAT scores or our grades. There is so much more to who we are and what you said. And also the book itself really made me think of that. So I just wanted to share and I wanted to ask, right? Because what is fascinating to me is that you spoke to academics, military leaders, CEOs, mm-hmm. scientists, futurists. You talked to all these people and they were saying, we like to see these things. We like to see curiosity, creativity, flexibility. Right. But those qualities or skills or traits, however we want to describe them, are often put down.
Right.
You know, they're soft skills. And, you know, we see men in particular, not all men, but it seems to lean that way, right? It's like, you need computer coding and investment knowledge, right? Like creativity, thinking outside the box. So can you talk more about that? Because you really saw these leaders saying, this is what we want.
Right. So in the book, I have quotes from the head of hiring at LinkedIn, you know, from the places that people think they want their children to work at, all saying the same thing. The technical part of most jobs, not all jobs, of most jobs can be taught. What can't be taught by the time somebody is 21, graduated from college and looking for a job is, I refuse to call them soft skills because I think they're just as hard to master as calculus. And for your daughter, one of the things that I used to say to my kids all the time, they'd come home and say, so-and-so is so smart. And I'd say, smart in what way? Mm-hmm. And that became sort of a touchstone for understanding that there were all different kinds of smart. So after a while, it wasn't, he's so smart because he's got A in social studies or whatever. It was like, think about in what way somebody's smart. And the notion that being a sensitive person is not valued, here's my experience with that. I'm at somewhere in the country. And somebody raises their hand and says to me, you know, basically, yeah. I'm hearing what you say, but my daughter, and he describes a gal just like your daughter. He says, my daughter, she talks a lot. Her friends love her. She figures out what they're going to do. She knows what their problems are. She's got advice and solutions and guidance. It's all about talking and being empathic. He says to me, what in the world can she do with that when she graduates?
Oh my gosh. We just want real jerks out there in the world, frankly. Like,
it was so funny to ask that question of a psychologist, you know, so I get to look at him and say, Oh, I don't know what she could do. Maybe she could be a psychologist.
Well, I like that you actually refer to these kinds of things like empathy, flexibility, critical thinking, curiosity, creativity. I like that you call them foundational skills as opposed to soft skills. I think that's very helpful for us to see them as anchors for what our kids need. Right. I think what was encouraging to me in the book is your assurance that we can actually teach these things. And I know you're saying before 21, but like, what are some ways that parents can make sure that they are valuing these skills and instilling them in our kids?
So your question made me think of how I raised my own kids. My oldest boy was, you know, the standard suburban, terrific student athlete. My middle kid was very creative. And my youngest kid was totally hands-on. And it would have been super easy, now we're talking 20 years ago, because the student athlete had all kinds of things to go to. You know, in addition to his athletics, it was honor roll and this role and that role. So it would have been easy to spend most of my time doing those things, which of course are gratifying to us as moms. Like, oh, my kid is smart, and except we're getting away from that concept of smart. But it was very important to me, and I think it's probably the best thing I did as a mother, that whenever one kid had something, the whole family went. So for my oldest kid, it was the tournament. And for my middle kid, it was the play he was in. And for my youngest kid, it was the engineering project that he had. I think sometimes we underestimate how much nonverbal communication there is in a household. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really concrete place where you can take a look at how you're spending your time and your conversation, by the way, whether your dinner conversation is all about the kid who's doing well. And even if you think it's not, like, I've been asked to sit at dinner with a lot of people who insist that they don't talk about this stuff and they don't make a big deal out of it. Not so much anymore, but I used to sit for a couple of days at dinner and they were right. They didn't talk about their kid's accomplishment. They talked about the guy down the block who just got a Tesla or who just was hired by Goldman Sachs. So they didn't have to talk directly to the kid. Oh, you're so smart. The whole conversation was focused on this narrow area of achievement, which is academic success and then basically financial success.
I'm glad you brought that up because I really want to go more into this, that when we talk about kids and success and achievement and overachievement, like you've talked about going into finance or being a lawyer or being a doctor, and sometimes those things kind of sound like upper class problems, right? Like we don't all have like Harvard bound kids who are going to be lawyers. Maybe they will, but maybe they won't. I think what's interesting about the book is that you kind of see the things that prime kids for success universally across all different backgrounds and socioeconomic status and geographically. Like, you know, you talk to military people, you talk to CEOs. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering if you can talk about the idea of priming kids for success, regardless of what their career might be.
So, by the way, none of my kids went to Harvard. Just to be clear about that. And it's an important point in passing, which is two of my kids are lawyers, one's in the arts. They didn't go to Harvard or Yale or Princeton. Our research is, does it make a difference? Maybe a little bit. Nowhere near the difference that people assume that that makes. Mm-hmm. And that's such an important point, because if you're sacrificing your kids' mental health, and by the way, we'll talk about that in a minute, why I think this is tied to mental health. Mm-hmm. But if you're sacrificing your kids' mental health to get them wherever you think is the most competitive place, it doesn't matter what they end up doing. They're not a good partner. They're not happy in their own skin. They don't feel they made their own choices about life. So this idea of, you know, you get into Harvard at any cost. I had a patient, and this is an example of why I think it's tied to mental health. A young man who was taking advanced calculus, not calculus, advanced calculus. And his father was graphing his grades on a daily basis.
Oh, goodness. So
right? This kid is 18 in advanced calculus, and his father doesn't trust him to keep track of his own grades. And why did I see the kid? He ended up with what we call trichotillomania. He was pulling out all his eyebrows and his hair and his eyelashes, which is tied to anxiety. That's an example of, I'm sure that kid got in somewhere very prestigious, but what was the cost? And we just saw that with that Varsity Blues scandal, where people people paid $500,000, $1 million to get their kids into schools. I mean, there are so many issues around integrity and morals and mental health and what's valued. And the reason I went to the military and specifically to the Navy SEALs, I was trying to think who would be the most resilient people in the world. Well, right. Navy SEALs would be one of them. The other group that's pretty darn resilient are immigrants. Mm-hmm. When you were talking earlier about, you know, yes. is this upper middle class? Some of it is. I mean, for kids in absolute poverty with no resources, they have other fish to fry. There are other issues, structural and institutional issues. But it's not just upper middle class kids. You see the same thing in immigrant families. You see the same thing in working class families. So I just want to clarify that because at Challenge Success, we started out almost exclusively with public schools, but they were public-private schools. Mm-hmm. And now it's not like that anymore. We are half public schools where the majority of kids are on assistance. So the basic structure of you learn better when you're not messed up. You learn better when you can think straight. You learn better when your parents are supportive of you because you're going to hit bumps. That's true for all kids.
And I just want to clarify that certainly there are immigrants who are also upper middle class and that there's a great diversity of immigrants that come into the country. But I love your point that it doesn't matter really where you come from, where you live or where you're going, mm-hmm. that this is all life skills that are important to instill in our kids. And kind of comes back, Kristen, to the conversation we had last week about kindness and siblings and fighting and teaching kids to be more empathic.
I mean, I can't stop thinking about Melinda's book.
Melinda Moyer?
Yeah.
Yeah, because all of those things, right? Those are the things that I know I personally value. And as we've talked about already, we talked about last week, those are the hardest things. Like you said, Madeline, like we can teach you how to do algebra, right? But can we teach you to care and go help someone who is feeling lonely sitting on a bench at their school?
Well, Kristen, we can.
Yeah.
The whole point of this book is we can teach that.
Yes.
These things were assumed to be like you were a resilient person or you weren't. Mm-hmm. You were an empathic person or you weren't. And that's just not true. Mm-hmm. If you talk to the people who train Navy SEALs, I spent a lot of time with the vice chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. It was amazing how many people actually wanted to talk about this. You find out that it's not the people that did the best, you know, looked like the strongest candidates. It's people who had a whole different skill set. And I think the other way to think about the importance of this is, you know, I love my work. I'm like old. I'm still doing the same work because I absolutely love it. But it's not my whole life. So I'm also a wife. I'm also a friend. I'm also a daughter. I'm also a mother. Now I'm a grandmother. So this entire focus on cultivating skills for your work life, that's fine, but it's just like a piece of what life hopefully looks like for you because you're in relationships and you have other interests. And it's not just about getting high grades. It's about having good relationships.
And we model that too, I think, for our kids.
Absolutely.
Right? When our kids see us being a good friend, being a good partner, enjoying our own, you know, soft fascination hobbies, enjoying puzzles, or taking another language, they see that we are well-rounded individuals with interests and hobbies and passions. That right. sets a good example for our kids. And actually, let's talk a little bit about that because I think, you know, you go in your chapter, Your Brain on Uncertainty, which really addresses some of the parental struggles that we all are facing. You know, mm-hmm. parents are saying things like, I know my kids need to eat more, sleep more, be on their phone less. I can't seem to help them make the change. I believe that there is something about setting an example yourself and, you know, taking a look in the mirror and saying, am I modeling, especially for young kids, but even for older kids too, am I doing that as well? Mm-hmm. But I want to know more, like what's happening with us here? Like, how do we overcome that? Because there are a fair amount of parents who are like, okay, this isn't good. I know I need a change, but I can't seem to get that wave of motivation mm-hmm. and energy over to my kids.
So people have often asked me, what do I do? I can't stand to see my child unhappy. And my answer to that, my crabby old answer to that is, then you're in the wrong profession. That,
yeah. Oh, God.
Yeah.
Is that the quote or what, Kristen?
Yeah. You're in the wrong profession.
You know, we expect so much from our kids, and yet we're willing to give ourselves a pass on what data is clear about at this point. Here's how I think about this. Parents have, for whatever reason, multiple reasons, decided to do this intensive parenting, pour their resources, their heart, their time into their children. There are pluses and minuses to that. Is it a distraction from our own isolation? How come our kids have become that critical to our life? And I think there's a question about that. But I also think the notion that you have to do everything for your kid only leads to problems for your kid down the line. Self-care is childcare. Period. All the questions about my kid really at the end of the day comes down to, so how are you doing? If you're doing, you've got six children between you.
That we know of.
Your children more or less will do how you're doing. That's the self-care is childcare. And look, we have just come through the most difficult 18 months imaginable. Everybody says, well, you know, there was a war and there was the Great Depression. That's true. But I think what made this different was the isolation. Even during wars where there's a higher body count, you know, I remember the stories my mom used to tell me of all the women getting together and going to the Victory Garden mm-hmm. to raise vegetables or selling war bonds together. And we didn't have that. We were unbelievably isolated. And you know, I think it takes a soft hand right now, even though I can, you know, be crabby or direct. Let's call it direct.
Which is another foundational skill in my book.
Mine too. I think it's been an unbelievably difficult time for mothers. Mm-hmm. And I don't think people now need to be saying, do this, do that, do this, do that. Because at the beginning of lockdown, people would say, what do we do? What do we do? And I would say, your job is to get through this. And at the beginning of lockdown, you know, I'm assuming many people in the Q&A would say, you know, Dr. Levine, that's kind of a low bar just to get through it. And I'm like, yep, that's my bar, get through it. And it still is. And nobody asks me or says anymore, that's a low bar. I think for those of us who have gotten through with our families reasonably intact and our mental health reasonably intact, we've done a good job.
Yeah, I just saw a friend on social media who said, I feel like I wasted the last 16 months. And I said, you know, whenever I think that way, I remind myself, if I got my kids out of this relatively happy and relatively sane and relatively healthy, then that was not time wasted. That was important. But I want to get back to something you said, which is really interesting about how we do is how our kids do. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I like about the book is you really focus on this idea of resilient and raising resilient kids in anxious times. And I would think that raising a resilient kid means that we give them the tools to get past our crap, for lack of a better word, right. That even if I'm anxious, even if I have my own issues or my own struggles, that our kids have the tools to do better. Does that sound fair?
Yeah, it does. And, you know, what is resilience? I mean, the word resilience gets thrown around a lot, and I don't think people have a really good understanding of what it is. Resilience is, you're not born with it. There is no resilience gene. Resilience is cultivated just like empathy and math skills. Nobody's resilient in all categories. And the one thing that's for certain is that your kid will run into trouble. The last talk I gave out here in San Francisco had a big audience, maybe 500-600 people. And for whatever reason, I just asked, how many people in the audience have not had a divorce, a loss, a serious illness, an accident, a bankruptcy? You know, I went. And out of that 500-600 people, one person raised their hand.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
And they probably were not being honest.
I don't know if they were being honest or not. I was just really worried about her walking into the parking lot afterwards.
Oh, gosh. Oh, my goodness. Dark, Madeline, dark.
Right. Yeah, that's me. And so that's a certainty that your kids will hit really significant bumps in their life. And I think that needs to be taken as seriously, if not more seriously, frankly, than what their salary is or what the prestige of their job is. They're going to have relationships. They're going to be mothers like all of us are. And that's a skill set of its own. But bouncing back from tragedy and from disruption and from all the things that happen over the course of a lifetime is a skill set. And we do nothing about it. Here are a couple of things that the Navy SEALs consider really important. Self-regulation, which an adolescent psychologist for years, I said there is nothing more important than self-regulation, because every kid I saw in my 40 years of treating teenagers was a failure in self-regulation, driving too fast, shoplifting, cutting, all the things that teenagers come to therapy for. Were failures in self-regulation. So that's the big one. Can you learn self-regulation? Yes, but you need help with it. And if you're talking about Navy SEALs, they can bring their blood pressure down. They can bring their breathing down. They do this thing called box breathing. And I was laughing in my last conversation because every book I've written, I've said, you know, meditation's a really good thing. And I don't meditate. I just, you know, I get schvilkes. I can't sit still that long.
That's me too. My gosh, maybe it's like a New York Jewish thing. I have a really hard time with that also.
Maybe it is. But so you learn another way to lower your anxiety. So if it's not meditation, then it's deep breathing, taking a walk around the block. For me, it's been binge watching Bosch for the last few weeks. You find some way to bring yourself down. That's the first thing that the SEALs talk about. They also talk about flexibility, right? You land and you're supposed to capture bin Laden and the other helicopter crashes. You can't panic. What are you going to do next? And I think the most important thing for kids, for all of us in this period of time, has been find the places where you have a little bit of control, because, you know, you mentioned that chapter in the book. Your brain is a prediction machine. That's all it wants to do is predict. And if you think about the course of a day, you know when your kids get up, you know what they like for breakfast, you know who's going to be slow getting out of the house, you know where to take them to school, you know where to get your groceries. And imagine if you didn't know any of that, if every one of those things was unknown, you know, you'd go crazy, but basically you wouldn't be able to do anything. And that's why I say the brain likes prediction. So you have a little bandwidth for things that don't go the way they belong. And that's where you need to be flexible and creative. And I think one way parents can do that with their kids is to be curious. Was there another way to look at that? Would somebody have a different perspective? You know, the kind of thinking that's not about, oh, you got the answer right.
Yes.
A quick thing on that. Carol Dweck, mindset.
Yes.
She's an important psychologist, you know, and she took these two groups of kids, put them in two different rooms, started giving them puzzles before, so easy puzzles they all could do. And then she puts them in two different rooms. They're young, they're like four. And she tells one group how smart, they're brilliant, they're great puzzle solvers, you know, and the other group she says nothing to. And it's the group that she says nothing to, and this has been duplicated over and over, that does better. Why? Because they don't have the pressure of, oh, she said I was brilliant, and now there's anxiety attached to their performance. So I think there's a lot of ways that we can cultivate this kind of flexibility. It's like saying smart in what way? It's helping your kids to see things in different ways and listening to them. And the last really strong point I want to make is 40 years of seeing teenagers, no teenager has ever walked into my office and said, you know, my problem is my parents just listen too much. Nobody has said that. They all say my parents talk too much, of course. And I think we ought to, you know, zip it for a bit, because our kids have had to process so much through this. And as to your friend who said he didn't get anything out of the pandemic, you know, then that becomes a waste of a pandemic. You should have gotten something out of this. You should have learned something about yourself. You should have taken the opportunity to figure out something in your life. And that's another SEAL thing, which is, what do you take away from the challenge? The challenge should make you stronger, not weaker.
And what a great reminder for those of us who are thinking, oh gosh, all these months went by and I didn't write the book. I didn't start the business. I didn't open the company. You know, if we're looking at our kids and thinking, well, they didn't pass math, or they're not where they should be in reading, like, they probably got a lot out of it too. It's just a different set of skills. And I mean, we could talk about this all day. The book is so good. It's so comprehensive. It's called Ready or Not, Preparing Our Kids to Thrive in an Uncertain and Rapidly Changing World. It's now available in paperback. You can learn more from Madeline at madelinelevine.com. It's a comprehensive book, but you can kind of jump around. It's wonderful. And I just love that the last section is called Thriving in the New Normal, if you want to know how positive it ends up and how much really actionable, wonderful advice there is. So we're grateful for you and for what you wrote. I think this is going to help a lot of parents.
Thank you, Liz. Thank you, Kristen.
And we'll be back with our cool picks of the week right after this.
So Liz, I cannot tell you how much my kids love the Vitapod machine from our sponsor.
Okay, so for our listeners who have followed us on Instagram and watched Kristen's really funny videos with her kids about Vitapod, I just want to say, for real, offline, having nothing to do with anything, she's like, Liz, this thing is awesome. This is so cool. This is so great. She's like sending me photos of it. She's like really into it.
Yes.
This is so fun.
Yeah, I can't believe it. I mean, kitchen gadgets. We all love kitchen gadgets, but it's so cool. I mean, Bridget uses it every morning. She makes herself a delicious, like, hydration drink and gets started with her online school. And she really likes it. And if people haven't seen the Vitapod machine, you can head over, obviously, to our Instagram or our Facebook. But what it is, it's this cool machine that makes tasty drinks full of vitamins and nutrients, like, with just a simple recyclable pod, right?
So it's kind of like the pod coffee maker type machines meets like the water filtration / bubbly soda machines in a way, right? Like, you can make individual drinks.
Exactly, right? No bubbly water, although maybe that's something they'll do at some point. But yeah, it's totally a water filter. And then you pop this pod in and it makes really tasty drinks. And so what's interesting, right, is these pods were formulated by human health scientists. So they've got your health in mind. None of them contain sugar. So actually, I'll be honest, that's why I'm totally fine with Bridget making these every day. I know she's getting hydrated. For some reason, my kids, it's tough to get them to drink water. So this is great.
I have that too. I'm always telling Sage, like, she'll be like, I'm not feeling great. And I'll be like, did you drink anything today? And she'll be like, but like, they think water is boring. And I know there's some people who are like, well, just drink more water. But like, you know, some kids will not drink if it's not water. And I don't want to give her like sports drinks all the time or like juice all the time.
Right.
But even if she can just put a lemon or put some flavor or something in it, it feels like a drink and not like water.
I agree with you completely. And so the only pod that actually has sugar is their sports pod, right? Because you actually need sugar to help aid recovery. But they have an energy one. It works. Just saying.
Yeah. Are you on that now?
I am not.
Are you speaking at 3x speed?
Yeah, I know. No, I am not on it now. I actually like the hydrate myself. And they have a great offer for our Spawn listeners. So if you go to vitapodworld.com, that's VITAPodWorld.com, you can use the code CMP10. You can get $10 off your own machine or a starter kit. So seriously, just check it out. I have to say, I am pleasantly surprised at how much my kids are using it. And it takes up a little space, but we are loving it. It's vitapodworld.com. Use CMP10 for $10 off your own Vitapod machine or the starter kit.
It really is very cool. I may use our code and get one for myself. Why not?
Well, it's time for
Cool Picks of the Week. Cool Picks of the Week.
And you are our guest. You get to go first. So we can't wait to hear what you've got.
Okay. Well, so my cool pick is Nandi Bushell. She's the 11-year-old who drummed with the Foo Fighters.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
In California. You got to watch it. You know, I was going to say like Amanda Gorman because I was so impressed with her, but this gal is 11.
Yes.
You know,
the Foo Fighters launched a new album last year and one of their big hits from it is called Waiting on a War. And my daughter is the lead in the video.
You're kidding.
So we love all Foo Fighters things around
here. Yes, we do. We are big Foo Fighters fans.
I struck it rich. I didn't No, know that. You must be so excited.
Oh, yeah, it's pretty cool. I mean, she doesn't get it. She's like, whatever, Gen X mom. But but she's like the little girl in the hoodie walking through the post-apocalyptic landscape. But Nandy Bushell is amazing. I'm so glad you brought her up. Like, she gives me joy every time I watch her. And what a great reminder. I love that.
And I just want to add into it that the reason it's so cool to me is she's 11. And we act like kids are so fragile and need so much help and are so helpless to do stuff. And then you see an 11-year-old kid who could do that.
Yes. And by the way, we should direct you to Pepper Pursley, who we had on our show recently. Uh-huh. Another young woman about the same age who is now actually calling WNBA games. She's so into sports and so well-spoken and knowledgeable and charismatic. It's like, I love seeing what these like preteens are doing. It's pretty insane.
It is amazing. Yeah. Well, what about you, Liz? What's your cool pick of the week?
Okay, so speaking of things that give me joy, let's talk coffee for a minute. Okay. So I'm like cold brew obsessed and it's really expensive.
Yes, it is.
Like when you get it at Starbucks or wherever. And I love supporting our local coffee places. So I go there as much as possible. However, because I love cold brew so much, a couple of years ago for my birthday, John got me the best ever cold brew maker. And he spent all this time researching like through Wirecutter and cross-referencing like Amazon reviews. And like, and I open the box and there's like this giant mason jar looking thing. And I have a weird aversion to mason jars for some reason.
Yeah, you do. That is a known thing. You don't like it.
Yeah, I don't. I don't know why. It's really weird. And the company is called like Country Line Kitchen Store or something like that. And I was like, what the heck is, why would you give me this? Let me tell you guys, it is awesome. It is fantastic. Right. It's this really simple, giant cold brew maker with a filter. And I will link it up. You can get it on Amazon. It's so good. It's the best one. It really is. And I've tried all the fancy ones that PR people have sent us that look really pretty and are elegant that I would normally have bought. They're not as good.
I'm looking at the photo. That is a gigantic mason jar. I'm laughing.
I know. It's really, well, except the thing is because the filter filled with coffee takes up so much of the space, you know, displaces the liquid, as we know from our physics classes. So when you pull that out, it's actually only like half a container of coffee, which we then transfer into a smaller container to keep in the fridge. It's a whole thing. I'm really into making my own cold brew. It saves us a lot of money. And I'll link it up on our podcast page because it's really cool. And that is my cool pick of the week. Cold coffee.
All right. I'm down.
How about you, Kristen? What you got for us this week?
Well, you know, I've just been looking at my own screen time lately. And as someone who works on social media, you know, it's a little tricky. The phone time is tricky because you're working and you just kind of feel like you always have a phone in your hand. So I actually invested in one of those Penguin minis, those little tiny books. We featured them early in 2020 and they're basically YA books that are the size of your palm. Like you can fit them in your hand. They're that tiny.
Yeah, they're cute and they're nicely designed.
They are beautifully designed and I still don't know how they do it, but they fit entire books in these little tiny books. And I'm actually reading I Am Not Your Perfect Mexican Daughter. I am hooked and I keep it in my purse. And so I'm off my phone. I know that I can get books on my phone. I used to do that actually, but I just wanted to give myself a break. So I have to say, if you're trying to do that, just pop one of those in your bag. The only thing I can't figure out, I really don't want to dog ear the pages. So if someone has an idea for how to bookmark those tiny, tiny little books with a very, the pages are very thin. That's really how they do it. Anyway, we'll link them up. They've added a bunch since they first launched, but that's my cool pick. Tiny little books.
I love that. Well, between the video, the coffee, and the books, I think I have my plans for the weekend now.
All right. Well, there you go.
Thank you so much for joining us for another episode of Spawned. Huge thanks to our amazing guest, Madeline. We're really lucky to have had you. And thanks to our awesome engineer, John Bowen. And hey, if you've got a minute and can leave us a 5-star review, we'd greatly appreciate your time. By doing that and subscribing and downloading our episodes, it helps other listeners like you find us. Besides, as we learned last week, you can leave a review all in positive emojis.
Yes.
Lollipops and pandas.
Yes, you absolutely can do that. You can also just subscribe. You can download our episodes. It really helps other listeners like you find us. And make sure you hop over to our Spawned podcast community on Facebook, where we chat about the show topics and lots of other things too, as well as our recipe rescue group and Out Tech Your Kids. Thanks so much for listening to Spawned. This is Kristen.
And this is Liz. Have a great day.
Bye. Oh, This is a Little Spawned Extra brought to you by Entangled Publishing. Author Robin Beelman is chatting with me today. Her book, Written for You, just came out a couple of weeks ago. Okay, Robin, important life-changing question just to start things off on the very deep side. What's your coffee drink of choice? And do you have any rules about your coffee?
Great question. I have to have coffee every single day, of course, but I am one of those people who likes a little coffee with her sweet. So I'm like a cafe mocha girl or an iced blended girl. Occasionally I'll do like a vanilla Americano, especially on a cold day when I want something warm, but I'm definitely like sweet coffee drinks. And there are no rules for me. I definitely have one every morning, need my coffee fix to get me through the day. But I'll often like meet a friend even late in the afternoon for coffee. I love it any time of day. It doesn't really affect me, the caffeine anyway, too much. I think I'm immune to it at this point. So I love it all day.
Cam Radcliffe is the best name ever. And by the way, it is a total hot guy name. Just, I don't know, Cam Radcliffe. So where do you find the names of your characters?
Thank you so much. I love his name too. And naming characters actually can be really hard. I'll find names like in the opening credits of TV shows or movies, and then I'll jot them down, or in magazine articles, or I'll overhear a name that I really like. And then probably one of my favorite websites is the top 100 or 1,000 baby names. And I will scroll through that list constantly, just trying to find just the right name for my characters, because it's definitely not easy, you know, and it has to be the right name for that character. So I might find a name that I love, but doesn't fit the character. So I'll jot it down and save it for later.
So is total hot guy name a thing, or did I just make that up?
It is totally a thing. Absolutely. I don't know about you, but there are certain names that I hear and I just immediately think, oh my God, that guy's like good looking or hot, you know, names like, I don't know, Shane and Luke, some of my favorites, Finn, Zane, Theo. I don't know. There's just names that you just think, ooh, I want to see what this guy looks like, or you conjure up, you know, an image in your head. So it's totally a thing. Absolutely. You know, I'm reluctant to say that there are some names that aren't hot, you know, in case somebody has a brother, sister, significant other, but like the name Dick isn't probably super hot, not as hot as those others.
I was thinking our apologies to the Bartholomews in the world.
Right, exactly. Apologies. Absolutely. Because everybody, you know what, everybody has their own thing and what they find appealing. And that's what's really great about writing too, is that I hope somebody can find something in every character, whether it's their name or a personality trait or something. We're all unique and different. So yeah.
Your story is a rom-com within a romance. So I know this is a tough question, maybe even harder than the coffee question. What is your all-time favorite rom-com?
Oh my gosh, I can only pick one. My all-time favorite rom-com probably is Legally Blonde. That would probably take the top spot.
Can't argue with that. That's a great one.
Yeah. And I actually have a quote in my new release from Legally Blonde. So shout out to that movie. And it gave me, I think, one of my cutest lines in the book.
Well, people are going to have to grab your book Written for You to see that. That's awesome. Okay. So let's talk about writer's block. It stinks. It really stinks. So what shakes you out of a writer's block?
Oh my gosh, writer's block is the worst. And I have suffered from it for sure. And especially these past 18 months with, you know, everything going on in the world, it's been really tough. It's been tough to feel creative. And usually when I'm down sitting at my computer and the words just aren't flowing, typically I'll just close my laptop and take a couple days to just kind of step away from the story and just let my characters naturally just kind of come to me. I don't put any pressure on myself, you know, to get words down on the page. I just let my mind just go and just relax for a couple days. And then usually I'm able to get back on track. If that doesn't work, then I'll usually reach out to a writer friend. I'm so blessed and lucky to have a really great group of writer pals, and they always know like exactly what my problem is or how to help me fix it and give really great suggestions that get me excited to sit back down and write again.
So you have been quoted as saying that you love writing romances that put a smile on the reader's face. I kind of want to know, what's the formula? So is it more sweet? sweet than sexy or more sexy than sweet?
I think the formula probably is more sweet than sexy with a side of humor. You know, sometimes when I'm writing, I crack myself up. I have no idea if I crack anyone else up, but I figure if I'm cracking myself up, maybe someone else will find it humorous. And basically, I just hope that writing characters who feel real and who readers can root for, then that will have them smiling. And at least, especially at the end of the book, when my hero and heroine always get their happily ever after.
For more great books, you can head over to entangledpublishing.com. Make sure you're following Robin on Instagram. She's Robin_Bielman. That's B-I-E-L-M-A-N. And grab your copy of Robin's new book, Written for You, right now at amazon.com.